Get exclusive content you just can't wait to hear. Hit us with your feedback. We want to know how you feel. So download the Shiny Radio. Get it free from the App Store. Download the Shiny Radio. See our features and much more. Download the Shiny Radio app for free now.
It's the Vinny Randall Show.
Welcome to another edition of the Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And this powerful show brings you conversations with today's stars and tomorrow's legends. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Come on.
It's the Benny Randall Show.
Benny Randall
Show.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of the Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. You can learn more about me at BennyRandall.com or you can go to BashaniRadio.com and download the app for this show and all the other beautiful shows we have. Thank you once again for allowing me into your hearts and your homes. Today's show is about leadership and who else to get to talk to except an expert leader. His name is David Bishop. David is recognized as a prolific powerhouse for consumer product launches and as a go-to digital media forehead with an impressive track record of leading corporations to exponential revenue growth. David has served as president to both Sony Pictures Home Entertainment and MGM Home Entertainment. During his tenure at Sony, David used his savvy skills to successfully take the industry lead into the launch and marketing of both Blu-ray and digital distribution market platforms, contributing to over $20 billion in gross revenues for Sony Pictures, even during the recession and the decline of the DVD markets. David and his team also earned several accolades for providing best customer service for Amazon and Walmart. As president and chief operating officer of MGM, David anticipated and fortuitously led the industry into the DVD market revolution, increasing MGM Home Entertainment revenues from $300 million to $1 billion. With David at MGM Home Entertainment, MGM received numerous customer service awards from top-tier retailers, including Best Buy and Target. The entertainment industry took note. David was inducted into Variety's Magazine Hall of Fame. I'm not going to go any further. You're going to have to do your research, Google him. He's Googleicious. David, welcome to the Benny Randall Show.
Thanks, Benny. Googleicious, is that a phrase?
Yes.
Love it.
Yeah. So let's start right from here. What is your definition of a leader? I read one of your blogs called The Invisible Leader. Okay.
Yeah.
Give me your definition of a leader.
Yeah, I think there's a couple different layers of leaders, right? So there's a leader who is feared, who is at the center of everything, of every decision. And you know, sometimes those leaders can be effective. There's certainly cases like Steve Jobs. I know a lot of people at Apple and people have read the story about Steve Jobs. He was a creative force. He drove the company. People knew if they came in with an idea, they better be prepared or they were going to get shot down, right? And then there's a leader who is a bit softer, kinder, but still at the center of things. And then there's the leader where it's almost like he or she is not there. So then at the end of any great accomplishment, the people come together and say, we did this, right? And for me, that's the most powerful type of leader, one that pushes decisions down appropriately, one that looks for strategic alignment, you know, make sure that everybody is rowing in the same direction. Someone who can, you know, accurately paint a picture or mirror a picture of reality and measure how people are doing and if they're getting to their goals. And creating a culture of open and honest feedback and transparency. I mean, for me, those are all essential ingredients to really creating a powerful organization, right? Because that's the ultimate goal, right? Mm-hmm. Is getting people as productive as possible. And coincidentally, or not so coincidentally, I'm just stopping because Siri just went off as we were talking. to say sorry, I can't hear what you said.
Did you invite Siri to the conversation as a backup?
I didn't. But you know, she often butts in. Maybe because I said Apple.
That might be the case.
And Siri is like reporting back to Apple.
Yeah, that.
So at any rate, that, you know, I was talking about how productivity and fun actually correlates together, and during my years at both MGM and Sony, I was really obsessive about measuring employee engagement, right? You know, are you having fun? Is this an interesting place for you to come? Are your opinions and your ideas valued? And that correlates directly to financial success.
That's very, very powerful, because I tend to engage the audiences when I'm speaking. So I'm curious, you did that in a corporate environment. What do you find happens when you engage your team?
Yeah. I mean, I think the potential goes up. They feel part of something greater than themselves, which is another area that we can get into, is the more you can have and define a purpose on why the organization exists. And it doesn't, you know, necessarily have to be world changing. I mean, we weren't necessarily changing the world at Sony or MGM, but we were bringing entertainment to the world, right? And so if you can get people aligned around a purpose like that, then that's going to have them jump out of bed in the morning and be, you know, ready to come to work and contribute.
So let me ask you, David, then what do you find was one of your more important lessons you learned in directing large teams? Because in a large team, you have a lot of different engines going. You also have a lot of different personalities going, and trying to keep the vision of the team and keeping people excited about the team. What was one or two of your more important lessons you learned in doing that with such a large team?
Yeah. So I had two huge experiences on, you know, kind of a timeline of growing teams. You know, one, when I started at MGM, we had our whole team could fit into a conference room, right? And then and then we grew that to multiple locations around the world, you know, from 30 to like ultimately like 3,000. And on that path of growth, when I look back on it, it was relatively easy to build out the culture, because we had kind of a core culture built. And then we, you know, the hard part was really finding people who could plug into that culture going forward, right? And so that it expanded rapidly, and I think by and large we did a great job of keeping that same core culture that we had when we started, right? Then I moved to Sony, and Sony, I'd stepped into a role with an existing culture, and that culture was very centralized. Almost all decisions had to go to the home office, and I came in with this message of empowerment. And people, of course, love that message. Who doesn't want to be empowered?
Absolutely.
But I found out that leadership can sometimes reflect the people that you brought in. So even though I was pushing for more decisions to be made, you know, at the sales rep level, at the marketing coordinator level, at the operations level, at the finance level, the type of people that environment attracted, they didn't really want those decisions. They were perfectly fine. They were perfectly fine with, just delivering the mail,
Wow.
Just tell me where the mail goes and I'll deliver it. So that was harder and eventually, had to make changes in the organization. I had to find people, at the top and throughout who were more eager to innovate and try new things and fail.
One thing I've learned about leadership, David, is that a great leader is someone who can effectively influence the people he is leading without micromanaging them. What has been your technique for being able to do that? As you often say, you're passionate, compassionately about turning executives into effective leaders. What has been your insight on that?
Yeah, I mean, it comes back again to a couple of key ingredients. It comes back to having a central purpose, a vision. The mark that you're trying to make within the organization and outside, obviously you can't ignore customers and defining key strategies around that and having them be measurable and then reporting back to people on a regular basis. I mean, we used to have monthly all hands meetings where we would share everything, financial performances, what our margins are, where they're good, where they're not. Now, not everyone wanted to hear that. I remember having some employees in the audience who I could tell their eyes were like glazing over or they need a little jolt of coffee before they went into those those meetings.
Yes.
But most people, appreciated the fact that we were transparent around all that information. So you call out the successes and you also call out the failures, not in a way where it's like, oh, I got you. Mm-hmm. In fact, on a quarterly basis, we used to celebrate failures. We would find the biggest screw up that somebody made. I remember like this national campaign in Japan. I think it was around the release of Spider-Man, and it was just a complete disaster. And so we would find those and then celebrate them as just as learning experiences, so that people had a level of psychological safety, right? That they knew that they could try things and learn from them. Obviously, if you create the same mistake over and over again, then
you have a different problem.
That's a problem. Right? But you do want to have an atmosphere where mistakes are okay as long as you learn from them.
So, what has been the result of using that technique? Because most people do the absolute opposite. You make a big mistake Everybody knows about it, but nobody says anything. They just look at you funny when you walk by, and they whisper when you're not around. So psychologically and mentally, what does that do to the team member who makes the big mistakes, and then you celebrate it at the same time, you know, helping them recognize that, hey, we can't be doing this again, but we'll let this pass. What does that do for the team? Does that energize that team member and say, okay, I can be creative and make some mistakes? Or does that do the opposite? Like, I don't want to do this again because I'm going to be celebrated for the wrong reason.
Yeah, it absolutely lifts them up. And, you know, it's done in sort of a cheeky way, if you will, as we celebrate this failure. But you can see, you know, this sense of pride that, hey, I took a risk. Right. Mm-hmm. And it seems obvious, but people still don't get it, that people perform better when they're, you know, when they're relaxed, when they feel safe, when they feel supported. You know, you don't perform well, you know, if you're coaching a baseball team and you tell the kid, you know, get a hit, hold the bat back, you know, while they're at the plate. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's not going to produce a good result. But if you speak to them a way that is supportive, you can do this, get at the plate, you strike out, no problem, get him next time. I mean, that's going to produce a better result than somebody always being on you for excellence, right? Mm-hmm. It's a great intention, but it doesn't necessarily produce a good result.
Mm, very, very powerful. And I had the pleasure to sit down at a dinner with David Bishop and a group of people. And one thing I learned about him the most is that he is well-rounded. He knows what his place is with his team, but he also makes his life come into that well-rounded circle. And, you know, we talked about meditation at the table, and I thought it was interesting how he inputs meditation into his life to make everything right. Can you speak a little bit about how you use that to create a successful mindset, David?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and I was kind of laughing at the table because I never thought in a business session that I'd be talking about meditation, because, you know, I started, you know, when I was really young. I started I was 19, and you know, back then there still had this kind of, you know, woo-woo patina, if you will, around it. And I'm like, you know, I'm in business. You know, I didn't want people saying, oh, you meditate, well, here, you share my crystal. Not that I have anything hilarious against crystals. If you love crystals, you go for it. I would say for, you know, probably the majority of my career, I just kept that part of my life quiet. Of course, you know, close friends and family mm-hmm. knew that I was a regular meditator. But it's you know, overall, you know, your performance improves by, you know, being active and then rest and recovery, right? Mm. And you can do that through exercise, you can do that from any number of ways. But I found just taking, you know, 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening, just sort of like quieted all the noise down, you know, that loop that can sometimes get in your head, mm-hmm. and just allow for all that noise to kind of bubble up, go away, and you get, you know, kind of a more creative focus, and you come at things, you know, more like a ninja warrior than
yes.
than someone Absolutely. Who's just like frenetically flailing their arms to try to win the fight.
quiet and powerful. I can definitely do. Yeah. And I related so much to that. So that's why I wanted to touch on that for a second, because I've been meditating for a long time. So I appreciate that transparency. Yeah. David, you've developed a unique neuroscience-based methodology for turning obstacles into opportunities. Can you share that with my audience a little bit about that?
Yeah, and developed might be too strong a word.
Okay.
I do use. I'm not a neuroscientist, but I do. I am attracted to that because, you know, in this new career, I'm focused on developing leaders and developing their teams and bringing them to their, you know, highest productivity levels. Mm-hmm. I need to see results, right? I need to see that there's some science behind things to know that the activity I'm engaged in is actually producing results, right? So there are a number of neuroscience-based tools that I use in the beginning parts of the journey with any leader that I'm working with, that will both create self-awareness in them, tell me who they are, tell me how they think, and also give you an indication of their signature strengths, and that can then set the foundation as you build change throughout the individual and ultimately the senior team, and that spills over to the organization. Mm-hmm. So there was actually one assessment tool that I was involved with in terms of helping to orchestrate that, and I was working at USC developing a leadership program called Third Space Thinking with one of the deans at the school, and it was focused on, you know, things like attributes like adaptability and cultural competency and empathy, and we there developed a tool where you could measure those things and find out, you know, where people are relative to a greater population, and then start to pin down, okay, you know, you're really great at cultural competency, you have this, you know, sensibility about you where you know like, okay, yeah, in some ways everybody's the same, but also everybody is different and comes from different cultural backgrounds, and so that's a sensibility that needs to be developed. Mm. If someone was strong in that area but they're not so strong in empathy, which I also think is a powerful leadership tool. Mm-hmm. Some people scratch their heads when they hear that, but you can start to kind of dive in and build those muscles so that you can then go back, you know, 6 months from that time and find out that you're actually more empathetic than when you started.
Very powerful. And that was a great transition to my next question, where you were saying that in your new vision of things that you're doing, you are helping the, you know, from becoming an executive leader to leading executives and turning people into it. Because I've always found that if you can't create new leaders, how big of a leader are you really? And so now you are into the aspect of training and helping new leaders become leaders. Tell my audience a little bit about that, and why did you go from leading big teams to now creating leaders so they can go do lead big teams or small teams or whatever?
Tell me
about that.
Yeah, sure. So so you know, towards the end of my tenure at Sony, where, you know, the business that I was running was starting to get disrupted, and I started, my job ended up being, you know, tearing the company down that I built, you know, laying off people and closing offices and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I started to then, you know, put together ideas on what the next phase of my career would be, And I wanted certain elements in it. You know, I wanted to make a big global impact still. And I wanted to have some flexibility around that in terms of time and controlling my own schedule and you know, not being in meetings half the day, that mm-hmm. type of thing. So, you know, as you're uncovering and now the audience knows, I do have this passion for building high performing teams. And so I started asking, well, how can I help other leaders do that? Mm-hmm. So I thought I could just show up and then people would line up to learn all this wisdom for
just
me. But
poop, here I am. I'm yeah, right here. Yeah, where's yeah. everybody?
right, exactly. So, but what I, you know, what I did learn, okay, well, this is a different skill set than creating an organization. So I actually went to Columbia University to learn the skills and the theory on how to work with individual leaders and ultimately with teams, and start to shift my mindset a bit so that I could be less of someone who would, you know, listen to a lot of great ideas and then pick one and then mm-hmm. push for a certain strategy, to someone who is more of an active listener and helping individuals kind of open up to their strengths, build some level of self-awareness, which is, you know, wildly important to any leader, and help in a way co-create that new version of themselves by, you know, by asking powerful questions, by getting them to sort of dig in and figure out what behaviors need to be changed and how to change it. So, and I'm having a blast doing it. I mean, initially I thought, okay, well, I'll be the leadership development guy for the media industry. And I started down that path, and I've worked with, you know, companies like Universal and executives at Sony and Paramount and Netflix and Amazon and the like. But I found I really get my passion from working with CEO founders and their teams, because I feel I can make the most amount of impact with those types of organizations, right? Mm. Because the journey that, and I'm conscious of time, I see we only have a couple minutes,
yeah.
But the journey that a CEO founder goes on is really traumatic, you know, where they start from a small team, then they launch their product, they get fundraising, their team goes from like 5 to 50, the things that were working for them when they were a team of five now doesn't work anymore. They try to push harder to make people work harder, but really that's the wrong solution, right? And it mm-hmm. comes back to what we were talking about before. They need to be able to learn to step back more, to learn to, you know, instead of being on the dance floor, be up in the balcony. So you're mm-hmm. overlooking the dance floor and absolutely. you're looking at the patterns that are developing, and you can start to choreograph things in a different way than if you're actually, you know, on the floor listening to your theme song, which, you know, always moves me to dance.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I want to get this last question in before we go. I mean, we got yeah. a little bit more time, but I just want to, you are filled with so much. It would take like days and days and days and days and years to get what's going on in that head, that I could tell you. So, you're a very insightful person and you're very humble. And I think that's the beauty. People didn't get to, you know, they understand when they meet you and, you know, come from that. So let me ask you this question. I want to, the yeah. digital landscape has changed the way leaders yeah. lead. What is the biggest aha moment in the way leaders have to lead in this digital age that we live in now? Because, yeah. you know, with remote working,
yep.
also mm-hmm. companies that are being built and sustained in very small places where, you know, you don't have the 15,000 square feet, you know, office. How yeah. has leadership been changed, and what do you see happening now in this digital landscape?
Yeah, in some ways it's a big challenge, right? Because people in a world where people are completely remote, or even in a hybrid world, there was a lot of learning that individuals made just being in the same space with one another, and a level of connectivity that they no longer have, right? So you could be in a room with someone for a meeting, you could walk down the hall with them, learn that, we have kids the same age, they both play soccer. You know, you start to kind of build that bond and that community, and you know, there's many kind of mentoring sessions along the way. You lose that in this virtual world. You know, a way to overcome it is, I'm a fellow at the Harvard Institute of Coaching, and we did a study during the pandemic to figure out, you know, what was working and what wasn't. Mm-hmm. And a really powerful technique that several leaders used was vulnerability, right? And in that, it was okay for them to say, okay, I know a lot, but I don't know this thing, right? And that sort of humanized people as they were going through this huge transition. And when leaders chose to kind of reach out to people on a one-on-one basis, mm-hmm. that was a huge deal to be able to make that connection. I think in some ways the positive that remains is when you're in a meeting session now, mm-hmm. every square is the same size. Mm. Right. So what I mean by that, if you think about, you know, if you've ever been in a conference room at an organization, there's always like the head of the table. There are people kind of sitting next to the person who's running the meeting. And then, at Sony, there were often like a row of chairs that were not connected to the table. And those people were there, and it created this kind of sense of hierarchy where, you know, voices may not have been heard. But when you have this, you know, equality, if you will, of the, you know, the Brady Bunch like squares that we look at in meeting settings, I think people have the ability to speak up more, mm-hmm. and so I think that is potentially a positive going forward.
And your final words are. Are you excited about the future, and why?
Yes, I am excited about the future. I mean, obviously, it's been chaotic times. There are probably more chaotic times ahead of us. You know, one of the things I talk about is when, you know, I was asked to give a speech about leading through uncertainty, and I'm like, it's always uncertain, right? So the leadership techniques don't change, but what you often find that in chaos, there's always opportunity, right? So if people just kind of can, you know, and people are really resilient, right? So if you accept the current reality, and then you start to say, okay, what can we do about it? Right. And how can we get better, and how can we change, and how can we ride the wave of change as opposed to, you know, just getting swept away by it? Then the leader will be more resilient. The company will be more resilient, and you know, people will thrive.
Mm, very, very powerful. David, I appreciate you coming on the Benny Randall Show, where we believe it's your business to know, and taking time out of your busy schedule. And I know we're on a different time difference, so I apologize for that, because that's an inside joke.
No problem. Yeah. All right.
If people want to reach out to you, how can they do that?
I have a website, thedavidbishopgroup.com. You can actually, if you want to email me even, I'm at david@thedavidbishopgroup.com. And let's start a dialogue.
There it is. I appreciate you, sir, and thanks for the powerful info, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, what did you learn about leadership today? That there's different ways to approach the leadership realm, and that the future holds some bigger and better things. David gave us insight on dealing with large teams and dealing with small teams, and how to turn executives into leaders that can lead the entire team, as he made the analogy, overlooking the dance floor, you know, of your team. And I think that's very powerful. And I appreciate you being here on the Benny Randall Show, where we believe it's your business to know. You can learn more about me at BennyRandall.com, or you can go to BashaniRadio.com and download the free app. That's BashaniRadio.com, and join us here every week for more powerful episodes. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator, and it's my humble pleasure to serve you. I love you, and you can't do a damn thing about it. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
It's never been easier to start your very own radio show on Bashani Radio. Your Bashani Radio Show will give you up to an hour show per week with access to over 500,000 monthly listeners. Plus, streamed to millions more on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. Run your own advertisements and keep 100% of the revenue. Sign up now on BashaniRadio.com and let us set everything up for you with no setup fees. BashaniRadio.com.
Get exclusive content you just can't wait to hear. Hit us with your feedback. We want to know how you feel. So download Bashani Radio. Get it free from the App Store. Download Bashani Radio. See our features and much more. Download the Bashani Radio app for free now.